From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
We remember the tragic shooting on FSU's campus and the resilience of the university students.
It's just about recovering and trying to get back to being a good, happy university.
Also this week, as Florida starts dumping public health mandates in favor of personal choice, it seems viruses don't really respond all that well to political arguments.
If you're feeling sick, don't come to class. It's your obligation to the community to stay home and not get us sick.
We'll also revisit the great Florida bear hunt controversy and return to the historic Florida Capitol, which saw a record number of demonstrations against the administration in Washington this year. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and our year-end wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. As the year 2025 wound down, a sudden surge of fatal shootings erupted, not only in the United States, but also abroad. Earlier this year, Florida's capital city was the site of just such a tragedy that left unimaginable pain in its wake. After two died and several others were injured this past April in that shooting on FSU's campus, members of the FSU community were left shaken by the events. And Regan McCarthy takes us back to just days following the incident as some students prepared to head back into the classroom.
For Olivia Wyszynski, the idea of heading back to the classroom feels nerve-wracking.
It's a little bit more intimidating to think about finishing the semester and like going back to class. Like, I haven't opened my computer because I don't know how it's gonna make me feel, but I still have exams to study for, so I have to face that reality at some point.
The junior nursing major says she was on the second floor of the student union building on the day of the shooting. She heard someone yell, "Call 911." At first, she thought it was a medical emergency.
And next thing I know, people were just rapidly leaving. And so I also left. I just went down the stairs. And by the time I reached the bottom, it was just desolate. And I didn't know what was going on. And so I just left the union, ran down the steps, and I ran down the path towards my car. And as I was going, I heard all the shots.
Over the weekend, Wyszynski's mom and sister came to visit her. She says they've been walking through campus, looking at the memorials where students and community members have piled flowers, candles, and notes in recognition of the tragedy.
We intentionally did it yesterday, me and my mom, because I didn't want coming to class on Monday by myself to be the first time I came back to campus. So it was really helpful to just like be hugged by my mom, just as I experienced all of that again. But we decided to come again today.
Another student, Caleb Miller, also spent Sunday back on campus. He was off campus in his apartment when the shooting happened. Even so, he says being back on campus is filled with emotion.
Very quiet, very sad, very sensitive.
Miller says his classes have been moved online, and he's glad to have that flexibility. But he also says he thinks it's important to go back to campus. He says that's why he's here on this day, to, as he says, try to get over the fear.
I know the school can't just close down forever. These things happen everywhere, but it's just about recovering and trying to get back to being a good, happy university that we all love.
The university's offering flexibility to students who are not yet ready to return, including working to make more classes available online and approving excused absences. FSU President Richard McCullough sent a video to students and staff.
I know this will not feel like a typical week. It's the last one before finals, and many of you are still processing what happened. We understand that.
McCullough encourages students and staff who need help to reach out for support. Additional security will be present on campus throughout the next several days. I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida Department of Health is moving forward with plans to remove child vaccine requirements for hepatitis B, chickenpox, and several other vaccines. It's part of a push from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and State Surgeon General Joseph Latipo to end all vaccine requirements in the state. Tristan Wood has been following the issue all year.
The state currently requires vaccines for kids attending school, including shots that protect against measles, mumps, rubella, polio, and chickenpox.
Every last one of them, every last one of them is wrong and drips with disdain and slavery.
That's Latipo earlier this year announcing he is working to remove those rules. Latipo previously worked to keep Florida from having COVID-19 vaccine requirements.
Who am I to tell you what your child should put in your body? I don't have that right. Your body is a gift from God. What you put into your body is because of your relationship with your body and your God.
Many medical groups, including the American Medical Association and Florida Medical Association, have opposed this direction. Republicans like Senator Rick Scott opposes the change, saying the state already gives exemptions for religious, health, or personal beliefs. And the state plan has garnered condemnation from out-of-state health policy experts.
If one didn't see this coming in Florida, then we probably haven't been paying much attention to what the Surgeon General has been saying and doing for a good number of years.
That's Eric Feldman, a professor of medical ethics and health policy at the University of Pennsylvania. He says Latipo's framing of vaccinations as an individual choice ignores how vaccinations limit the spread of disease and protect everyone in society.
It's like I tell my students at Penn, if you're feeling sick, don't come to class. It's your obligation to the community to stay home and not get us sick. And staying home isn't just for you, it's for us. Getting vaccinated. Your Surgeon General says getting vaccinated should just be an individual family choice. But it's not just an individual family choice, because your choice impinges on the opportunities and health and well-being of other people.
He thinks the move will have drastic harms to children in Florida. He pointed to a report from the Center for Disease Control that estimates from 1994 to 2023, routine childhood vaccinations will have nationally prevented approximately 508 million cases of illness, 32 million hospitalizations, and over a million deaths.
If we're going to stop vaccinating our kids, we're going to be creating situations in which they are more likely to get sick and more likely to die from things they could have prevented.
Democratic politicians pointed out the move from Latipo as counter to promises he previously made. Latipo made these comments in 2023, saying he supported current laws about vaccine requirements.
I think that the Florida statutes are appropriate, and the Florida statutes provide mandated vaccines along with an opportunity for families, parents who believe otherwise to opt out, and I think that's appropriate.
These targeted rule changes won't impact other vaccinations like polio, measles, mumps, and tetanus before attending public school, because those are enshrined in Florida statute. The legislature would need to pass a law to change that requirement. But Democratic State Senator Tina Polsky thinks the harm may already be done.
I almost feel like he's been prepping us for this, you know, slowly but surely sowing doubt in everyone's mind.
She points to anti-vaccine messaging from DeSantis and Latipo as responsible for dropping child vaccination rates in Florida.
So we're almost not at herd immunity for our immunizations like we were before, simply because those in charge are feeding into the controversy and the conspiracy that really should not exist. There's no scientific basis for it.
Feldman says this messaging campaign from Latipo will continue to erode public trust in healthcare.
That's about as destructive of the public health system and as misleading and dishonest as I think one could find.
It's unclear if there will be a desire in the Florida legislature to remove vaccine requirements from those other vaccinations during the 2026 legislative session. I'm Tristan Wood.
Coming up on Capitol Report, Florida brings back its controversial black bear hunt, although state officials insist everything will be done humanely and by the book.
There will be a limited number of legal hunters out there that the agencies have to keep track of
During the year nearly passed, it seemed a growing number of people joined the campaign to persuade more bio dads to become actual, loving, supportive, and present fathers.
We're seeing about 18 million kids that live in the U.S. that don't have a father involved in their life, specifically a biological father.
And this year has been one of citizens making their voices heard. We visited one of the No Kings protests that took place on the Florida Capitol lawn.
I mean, there's so many reasons to protest here today.
Florida's approval of a bear hunt this year brought great controversy and strong feelings on both sides. The three-week hunt approved by the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission ends December 28th. It's the first such hunt since 2015, when hundreds of bears were killed in just 2 days. That led the state to quickly shut it down. The state awarded just 172 permits for this year's hunt. Before it received final approval, we covered this topic on the WFSU podcast, Speaking Of. Gina Jordan brings us some of what aired in that July episode.
I recognize this is a tough thing to talk about, and it's hard.
The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission voted 4-1 at its May meeting to move forward with the state's first bear hunt in a decade. 170 people spoke during public comment at the meeting, most of them against, and many referred to the last bear hunt in 2015.
Many of us were there. There were a lot of cubs in the back of trucks. 40% of those bears were lactating females, so the rules were not followed. And we had way stations, which is how we found these things out.
But emotions don't drive wildlife policy. Science does. We've got the North American Model of Conservation. This organization, this agency has been a tower of the North American Model of Conservation. It's time to have a bear hunt. We can argue about methods. We can argue about numbers, etc. But bears are game species.
We just heard from Jamie Dos Santos and then Travis Thompson. They spoke during public comment at the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission meeting in May. I'm joined by WFSU reporter Margie Menzel. Margie, you have done extensive reporting on this. Tell us what the commission has decided and why.
Wildlife managers say the hunt is a tool for managing the black bear population and for keeping the bears from interacting with people. Opponents say there are ways to solve these problems that don't involve killing bears, such as keeping trash cans secured. They say black bears are shy and primarily vegetarian. But an 89-year-old Collier County man and his dog were killed in May. That was Florida's first recorded fatal bear attack. According to the News Service of Florida, the state has recorded 42 incidents since the 1970s of wild bears making physical contact with people.
Yeah, so there will be a bear hunt this year from December 6th through the 28th. Then what happens?
After that, annual hunts could be held sometime between October 1st and December 31st.
Okay, so I want to go back. Florida had a bear hunt in 2015, and it was abruptly halted.
Yeah, it was halted because bears were being killed so quickly. The state had a quota of 320 bears to be killed over the course of a week. But 304 bears were killed in the first 2 days. So the FWC says the rules for the hunt being drawn up now will ensure that that kind of situation doesn't happen this year.
Okay, this issue of human and bear interactions keeps coming up as one of the reasons to have an annual bear hunt. So let's look at Florida's black bear population. How many of these animals live in Florida, and how is that number determined?
Well, the state estimates just over 4,000 bears statewide. They get that figure by building hair corrals and adding something tasty like honey. These corrals collect tufts of hair when the bears come to investigate. The FWC says the Florida black bear has come back from numbering just a few hundred decades ago. Florida's bear population is really kind of small compared to states like Alaska and California. But Franklin County Sheriff A.J. Tony Smith has been pretty vocal about the interactions between bears and residents of his county.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I love the bears. I don't want to see bears killed. But bears cannot live in the same area where people are living. And I think what's happened in our community, 90% belongs to the state and the feds. The other 5 or 10% people live on along the coast. And the bears have, they've been born there and they've grown up there. And now they stay there. And that's the problem. It's not the bears are coming from the forest down here. It's the ones that are growing up here. And so those are the ones that need to be relocated and something needs to happen. So, you know, if government, FWC decides it wants to have a hunt, as long as it's done properly, I don't see a problem with it.
And Margie, we have heard from a number of people who have concerns about the specifics of this upcoming hunt.
Right, right. Like Susan Cerulean. Susan is an author and activist who'd worked at the FWC decades ago, but she wasn't involved with bear management. She notes that Florida's rapid development has squeezed bears into smaller habitats.
And you can't just say, oh, well, they'll find another place. It doesn't work that way, although that is not the way we act. The other problem besides just sheer loss of habitat is the fragmentation of habitat. And when bears and squirrels and raccoons and possums try to cross a new road, like the road between Tallahassee and Crawfordville that's just been widened, we see many more roadkills. We see turtles. We see gopher turtles. We see snakes. We see foxes. Because they're moving from a place that they know in their being that is part of their home range. And bears have a huge home range.
But, I mean, ultimately, this year's hunt is expected to go forward, and a lot of people support it.
That's absolutely true, Gina. And some have mixed feelings about it, like Joe Guthrie. He's a research biologist at Florida's Archbold Station, and he's an expert on apex predators, which bears are. That means nothing is hunting them for food. Guthrie says he's a lifelong hunter, but not of bears.
There will be a limited number of legal hunters out there that the agencies have to keep track of and enforce the rules for. Seems likely there will be some opportunists and poachers. That's always been the case. That will always be the case, that we'll have to fight as hard as we can against them. I mean, we need to make sure that the agencies, especially FWC, has the resources to enforce the laws.
And there's a twist here. Advocates are encouraging opponents of the hunt to apply for and hopefully get as many permits as possible.
Oh, that would be an interesting turn. So I assume that those who get the permits are not required to kill a bear?
I don't think so. Not that I can tell.
That was Margie Menzel and Gina Jordan in July previewing the bear hunt that is happening right now in Florida. The latest U.S. Census Bureau stats show that the majority of households with children in this country remain the two-parent variety. But one out of four households with kids have only one parent. Far and away, that parent is called mom. Combine that with poverty, repeat over several generations, and Leon County Sheriff Walt McNeil says you've got the recipe for kids dropping out of school and committing crimes.
Our crime sometimes deals with generational crime, and that means we failed several years ago to address some of the issues, and they crop up today.
It's mostly the boys who follow this crooked path, says McNeil, and he says one reason is because they lack loving, positive male role models in their lives. In other words, a dad. Kids can sometimes turn to their peers to help fill the void, but often those peers don't provide good guidance. Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney Jack Campbell says these groups of young men often reinforce their own worst instincts and get into big trouble.
They don't want to call law enforcement when one of their friends gets shot. What they do is they and their friends will then arm themselves and they will go and resolve it. A few weeks ago, we had three shootings within 12 hours on a weekend. None of them contacted law enforcement or cooperated with us. Instead, what they did is they went and they and their friends gunned up. That's how one shooting turns into two, it turns into three.
So in answer to the question why so many young people are involved in crime, Mark Merrill, the founder of Tampa-based Family First, says just look at how many single-parent homes there are today.
We're seeing about 18 million kids that live in the U.S. Don't have a father involved in their life, specifically a biological father. If you think about that stat, that's enough to fill New York City twice or Los Angeles four times over.
During the 2022 Florida legislative session, lawmakers passed and Governor DeSantis signed the Father First Bill to encourage more biological dads to stay with their children by funneling funding toward programs aimed at supporting dads. The legislation put Merrill's organization in charge of implementing the law.
Family First and our All Pro Dad program was challenged and given the responsibility to implement this initiative called Father First Florida.
Lawmakers set aside just under $69 million for the program. Merrill says part of that is going to public awareness campaigns to promote responsible fatherhood.
We're also doing it on the ground at the community level through a network of, so far, 30 community organizations that we've brought together and that have been provided funding through this legislation.
Organizations like Boys and Girls Clubs, Children of Inmates, Be Strong International, and many others, Merrill says these groups supply the actual services.
Provide mentorship programs, one-on-one support, help them with counseling, child custody issues, and so many different things, even for incarcerated dads.
As Father First Florida heads toward its third year, Merrill says it's still a bit early to judge its effectiveness as it tries to reverse many generations of family dysfunction.
We're already getting a lot of input that people are starting to pay more attention to this issue, and these community organizations are serving more and more men and families and children. I really sense that over the next year, we're going to start seeing some more metrics and KPIs of lives being impacted.
KPIs standing for Key Performance Indicators, which is a fancy way of saying more kids and more dads being together. Since Governor Ron DeSantis started his push to slash homestead property taxes, he suggested lost government revenue could be offset by taxes collected from tourists and seasonal residents. One of his most recent suggestions is that visitors could also help free Floridians from turnpike system tolls. During the pre-holiday state cabinet meeting, DeSantis recalled that the tolls on the Florida Turnpike had been in place since he was a kid. He went on to ask Ben Watkins, he's the director of the Florida Division of Bond Finance, when the turnpike bonds would be paid off. The governor, thinking out loud, wondered if visitors could pick up the tab and give Floridians a break. The comment came as part of a broader talk about affordability. Watkins responded, "We'll take a look at that." Tolls have been collected on Florida's turnpike since its first section opened as the Sunshine State Parkway in 1957. You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, this week, this year, we've seen folks across the country repeatedly exercise their right to peaceably assemble, often to protest policies from the Trump administration. Regan McCarthy was at one such protest in June when thousands of people gathered outside the state capitol building for a so-called No Kings protest. Participants decried President Donald Trump and his administration, whose practices, some say, reflect those of a would-be king or dictator. The rally took place on the same day as similar gatherings across the state and throughout the country, and hours before a Washington, D.C. military parade requested by Trump that was in conjunction with his 79th birthday.
Thousands filled the lawn in front of the state's historic Capitol building and lined both sides of Monroe Street. They made speeches, chanted, and waved signs emblazoned with phrases like "ice melts" in Florida. If there's money for a parade, there's money for Medicaid. And make America follow the Constitution again.
We're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna.
Andrew Falls brought their ukulele to, as they say, add to the noise with protest songs. They were joined by members of their band, Pineapple Tuesday.
I mean, there's so many reasons to protest here today.
For Falls, that list includes policies that have targeted members of the transgender community, as well as the Trump administration's immigration crackdown and deportation efforts. Then there's the president's musings about potentially seeking a third term, something Falls calls dictator behavior. And now a military parade that's estimated to cost between $25 million and $45 million.
The fact that Trump is spending so much money on a military parade when there's so many people out there who are dying because they can't afford health care, can't afford food, can't afford housing, it's messed up.
The government's spending and its funding cuts are also a concern for Brianna Stamper, a Tallahassee local who was among the crowd Saturday. She says she joined the protest because she thinks it's important to stand up for what she believes in.
What's going on is not right, and I feel like we need to use our rights before we lose them, and that's why I'm here advocating.
Stamper says she thinks recent Immigration and Custom Enforcement, or ICE, raids are unfair.
I think if you're going to deport people, you need to give them due process. Everybody here deserves due process. Like, every single morning we recited the Pledge of Allegiance, liberty and justice for all. I'm not willing to back down on that now. Oh, he's a tough guy. Look at him. Look at him.
Across the street, Josh Ivan is standing with a small group of counter-protesters. He says he's here because he supports the Trump administration's immigration policy. And he's worried undocumented immigrants are filling jobs that could otherwise be taken by American citizens.
They don't want to hire somebody $14 an hour to do a job that they can hire an illegal immigrant $9 to do. So that's what they're going to do. And that hurts the people that are in line waiting for those jobs.
Ivan says he came to the protest to show his support for the president, but also he admits because he wants to troll.
This is my first protest, so I'm just out here to have fun and experience what I've been seeing on TV and the news and all this stuff. That's what I'm here to do, and I'm having fun with it, and I'm not here with any malicious intent.
At one point, a small skirmish broke out between a No Kings protester and Ivan and a member of his group. Police issued a trespass warning to the protester and directed him to leave. Ivan and his small group were allowed to stay. He says he doesn't believe the protest will have much of an impact.
I've come to the realization that the average Joe really doesn't have a huge impact or any impact on huge national policies like this.
But the No Kings protesters disagree. Activists say they believe each protest raises awareness, grows momentum, and creates the opportunity to build a movement.
We're not gonna take it, everybody! No! We ain't gonna take it! We're not gonna take it anymore!
I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Tristan Wood. We also send out a very sincere thanks to all the great journalists and producers who have contributed to the Capitol Report cause week after week. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week online and on air for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.